Hello everyone, and welcome to Dallas Hoops Fancast, a podcast for Mavs fans. I'm your host, Sydney, and I'm here with my co-host, Martin.
Hey guys.
Remember, you can follow the show on Twitter at Dallas Hoopscast. I'm at underscore Sydney Myers. Martin is at Martin L. Myers. And you can listen to new episodes and read exclusive articles at DallasHoopscast.com. And we have a new review on Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a review, and if you actually type out like words and things, we'll read them on here. So this review is from Miguel Molina Jr. I thought it was nice that he used his real name. Usually it's like a weird screen name or something. He said, been listening since around free agency and haven't missed a pod since. It's refreshing listening to two fellow passionate fans share their thoughts on our favorite team. It's even cooler that these two are a couple. #hashbrowngoals. #goals. Oh.
Thank you, Miguel.
Thank you, Miguel. And I hope you're listening, and we really appreciate it. So yeah, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a review and all the stars and things. But let's get started. Actually, do you want to talk about Sonic, the movie?
I don't want to do that.
Okay.
I don't want to turn into the fake forced.
I don't think it's fake.
Cool. Let me just fast forward the first 2 minutes of this pod.
And I think that some people appreciate the witty banter. I think maybe we're not capable of the witty banter, so we just get right to the thing. Okay, yeah. So nothing about Sonic, except we went and saw it, and it was super
okay, you just said nothing weird. About Sonic. Okay.
just one sentence. It was weird how good it was, because it was like, I don't know, for some reason I was expecting something really cheesy and lame and just
which it was.
Done.
But
yeah,
it was
but
good.
It was also entertaining. And like the funny, the jokes were actually funny. And they weren't like, funny. It was like, that is surprisingly humorous. I'm laughing right now. And I was not expecting that.
All right, that's enough.
Anyways,
Sonic
okay.
The Hedgehog talk.
So we're at the All-Star break. The Mavericks, I mean, have surprised a lot of people in terms of how good they are, but there's still a lot of time left in the season. I think before the season, we predicted, or you predicted, I think, that they would win,
I think,
what,
48
like
40,
yeah,
to
48
50.
Games, which they could easily do. After the break, coming out of the break, they have a pretty easy schedule. They have some tough games, which we're going to get into, like, the most important games after the break, but really, they have a schedule that is easy enough to where they're more than likely they're going to be in the playoffs. They're the seventh seed right now, but they could jump up even higher than that. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they take care of business.
I think the fourth seed is within reach. Now, they would have to have an amazing schedule in order to jump all the way up to the fourth.
Yeah.
And really, at that point, do you want it? I guess it would depend on matchups and all of that, who you're facing in the playoffs, but I don't think they're technically out of the fourth seed race. How high they go, I don't know.
Currently, the Jazz are the fourth seed, and the Mavericks are three and a half games behind them.
That would be tough.
Math.
Like, the Jazz would have to have a really, really struggle the last half of the season, or the last quarter of the season, and the Mavs would have to be awesome.
So here's my thing about, like, do we want to finish fourth? Reverse psychologicalness. If they finish fourth, that means that they were good enough to be fourth.
Yes.
That is true.
It is true.
Am I right?
You are right.
Yeah.
Thank you for that analysis. No,
but I'm saying, so like,
you should be the best team you can be.
Yeah. So it's not like, oh, but if we're fourth, that means we have to face it would be the Rockets right now, or like, you know, oh, if we move up to six, that means we'd have to face the Clippers. Like, to me, I don't look, obviously the matchup is important, but if you are good enough to be fourth, then that's really what you want.
I think you really don't worry about those things until the last couple of games of the season. You need to focus on winning and winning as many games as possible.
Yeah.
Now, as you get to the last two, where you're guaranteed in the playoffs and you're guaranteed the fourth or fifth spot, then you can play that game of, you know, matchup driven, you know, how you want to play the last two games of the season. But it's too early to determine that. Really, the first 10 games after the All-Star break, I think are really important for the Mavericks because they've been kind of hovering around. I know they've had a lot of injuries with Porzingis and Luka, but they've been hovering around that 500 ball since, I don't know, since January.
I mean, almost middle of December.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Because
that was when Luka was out the first time.
Yes, and so these first 10 games out of the All-Star break, if they can stay healthy, I think they're really important. I think you want to go 7-3 or 8-2 out of these first 10 just to give yourself some momentum, maybe rise a little bit in the standings, put a little distance between you and Oklahoma City Thunder. Because in all honesty, I think the Mavericks are better than the Thunder. Now, they just have had so many injuries to Luka and Porzingis, their two best players, that they can't really gain any momentum or surpass them a lot in the standings. So I think these first 10 games are important. Put some distance between you and the Thunder.
Yeah, they currently have the same record as the Thunder. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so on the one hand, I'm like, the Mavs are better than the Thunder, but then it's like the old saying, you are what your record says you are.
Yeah, but they've had injuries. Said, yeah,
injuries. And it's not just, you know, to whoever, it's Luka and Porzingis, two best players.
Well, they've struggled to get a consistent starting lineup. When they get a starting lineup, somebody goes down, Porzingis goes down, or Luka goes down, or Dwight Powell goes down, and then one of them comes back, and the other one comes back, and then one of them goes down again. So we've never had a consistent, like my favorite starting lineup, I think we've had like four games, and that's with Luka, Curry, Hardaway, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Porzingis at the five. That's my favorite starting lineup. And I think we've had it like three games maybe since Powell was injured. And Powell was injured like a long time ago. So,
well, and that might change again with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist coming in.
I don't think – I would be shocked. First of all, I was shocked we signed him.
Yeah, me too.
but I would be just as shocked if somehow he finds himself in the starting lineup. Now, I do think you'll see at some point you're going to see a lineup of Luka, Hardaway, Finney-Smith, Kidd-Gilchrist, and Porzingis because I think the Mavericks need to see what direction they go with going forward, how they do their starting lineups or how they build their team. And I think they want to see what a three-wing lineup with Luka and Porzingis really looks like so they can switch and play really good defense with those three positions.
Yeah, I think they're in a good position. Like you were saying, all of those lineups, you have Porzingis at the five, and there's a lot of teams, well, there's some teams that are going away from having any big men on the court at all. Mm-hmm. Like the Rockets, everyone knows what they're doing. They don't have any players over like 6'7". And so it's kind of a luxury to have a guy like Porzingis who, yeah, he's a big, but you're not playing him because you have to. You're playing him because he's really good. Mm-hmm. So you have that guy that is a big, but he can protect the paint. He has that mobility. So you're able to kind of play that sort of stretch five type, you know, five out offense. But on the other end, you still have that defensive anchor. Whereas the Rockets, they're doing that, the five out, but they don't have the rim protector on the other end. Right now they have to do either five out or a rim protector.
And I think they do it for two reasons, not just the five out. Obviously, if Capella could shoot threes, he's probably not going anywhere. But another area that it helps them is defensive switches. PJ Tucker can switch onto any position. So really now their entire defense, and with the way the league is now, you have to be able to switch. Now, if Porzingis comes and sets a screen for Luka, it's PJ Tucker that's switching off onto him.
Yeah.
And that helps the Rockets. But again, I think if Capella could shoot threes, he would still be with the Rockets. And, you know, to say that teams are going away from that, really, it's only the Rockets that have decided to do this. Most other teams at least have one solid big on the floor at all times because defensive purposes and protecting the rim. And that's really, I'm curious to see, how are they going to defend the rim? What happens when they play the Lakers?
Well, yeah, that was what I was going to ask.
Or the Bucks. I mean, Giannis is 6'10 or what, 6'11?
He's super tall.
Yeah, he's huge. Yeah. And are you telling me PJ Tucker's going to man him up?
Yeah. Mm. Well, and that's what I was saying about having the luxury of a big that is as skilled as Porzingis. It's like, yeah, offensively it works great for the Rockets, and defensively it gives you some advantage too, but I think that they did it not so much because they feel that it is like 100% the best thing to do, but because they don't have a Porzingis or an Anthony Davis. So they're like, okay, you know, barring us getting one of those guys, let's just go all in on this.
Honestly, I don't like the decision, but I understand five out is kind of the way to go to open the floor up for your playmakers. But I don't feel like Capella was the problem. You know, I feel like his lob threat ability opened it up enough. I don't know what the Rockets are doing, to be honest with you.
Well, like you said, if Capella could shoot threes, he would still be there. And if you
perhaps think of, that's just my assumption.
Yeah, that's an assumption. And so it's like with Porzingis, they can play five out, but they still have the rim protector.
The one thing though that Porzingis is going to have to get better at is pick and roll defense. Because he's a great help side rim protector. He's great at being where he needs to be when a player drives it to the rim. But on pick and roll defense, he oftentimes takes the wrong angle. He doesn't have good footwork, and so he gets beat on that. So he's going to have to work on that. But you're right. I think if the Rockets had Porzingis, then obviously they wouldn't trade him.
Yeah. And that's kind of what Capella is. Or what Porzingis is, he's that kind of rim protector.
It's what the Rockets would want.
But he can shoot. So this kind of gets into one of the things I want to talk about, questions that need to be answered after the All-Star break. And one of them was, what direction are they going to go in with their starting lineup? And so you talked about there's a starting lineup that you really like that we haven't seen yet. With Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, they might try some new things, but what are they going to do? Are they going to do three defensive wings with Finney Smith and MKG? And then
it would be Tim Hardaway.
Hardaway. So it wouldn't be all defense, but you'd have the two defensive wings and then Hardaway. Or do they just keep it where it is right now with Curry and Hardaway, so the wings are really just scorers?
Yeah, I think personally, I think they're going to go with Luka Hardaway or a Luka Curry Hardaway Finney Smith. And Porzingis at the five, Finney Smith at the four. Although we've only seen it in short spurts, it's been a pretty effective lineup.
Yeah.
It really puts a lot of pressure on defenses. But again, the Mavericks had so much injuries, who really knows how effective the lineup is? So I think these first 10 games out of the All-Star break are going to determine really what their starting lineup is going to be for the rest of the season. Because if Kidd-Gilchrist comes in and he plays really well and his on-court rating is really, really high, then, you know, Carlisle will switch it up in a heartbeat.
If his plus-minus is any, good.
His net rating, whatever, Carlisle is going to switch it up in a heartbeat.
Yeah. One thing I'll say about Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is that one of his strengths is he's a good cutter, a good slasher off the ball, because teams don't obviously guard him as a shooter because he's not a very good shooter. But because of that, he moves well with without the ball, and the defenses, they lose him sometimes because they're not paying attention to him. And even when they are on him, he's good at knowing the spot to be in, when to cut, what angle to cut at.
Yeah, I think there's, and it's weird to say because the guy's been in the league like 7 years, but I think there's a lot of potential with him, obviously, because of his defensive ability, but also offensively.
Yeah.
Not so much shooting, but his ability to know where to be.
Yeah.
And with a guy like Luka, it's really good to find that open spot because Luka can find you there. And Carlisle has a way of extracting whatever good basketball you have and putting it in play. And so players that were kind of lost causes on other teams, a lot of times they can come here, not every time, but a lot of times they can come here and be effective basketball players because Carlisle knows how to put you in particular situations.
Yeah. We talked about that last time. Monte Ellis, who are the other guys? Brandon Wright. I can't remember. Anyway, that was in the last episode. Yeah, how he's just good at figuring out what a guy is good at and making him do just that and doing it really well. So we were trying to figure out, like, how exactly are they going to use Michael Kidd-Gilchrist? And the idea came up of him replacing Dwight Powell. But because we were like, he moves well without the ball, he's athletic. But then we were like, nah, because Dwight Powell is 6'10". Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is 6'6". It's just obviously not the same. But when you dig into it, like, first of all, he moves well without the ball. He's athletic and he's not a shooter. In a lot of ways, that is Dwight Powell. If you look at his measurements, at least at the draft combine, his wingspan, he has a 7-foot wingspan. Dwight Powell had a 7.5-inch wingspan. His standing reach, 8 feet, 8.5. Dwight Powell was 8'9". And then his max vertical, Dwight Powell's max vertical was 35. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is 35.5. Like, aside from the height, athletically, they're actually very similar. Mm-hmm. Now, Kidd-Gilchrist hasn't performed as a pick and like the roll man in a pick and roll mm-hmm. as well as Dwight Powell has. But when you look at the numbers and the intangibles and you see him play, like, there's a possibility that he could be that. I don't know if they're going to use him that way. There's actually been other people saying that he could be like a Draymond Green kind of guy, which again, sort of similar, defensive minded, can guard a pretty much, you know, 1 through 4 at least, and some fives. Not a great shooter or scorer, but moves well without the ball, cuts, slash, he's always in the right place at the right time. In a lot of ways, that is a lot like Draymond Green, and so they could use him in that way.
Yeah, I don't like throwing that name out there with
him.
Well,
I just mean the style.
I think...
I'm not saying he's at that level. I'm just saying the style.
I think stylistically and really player, what we hope Kidd-Gilchrist to become is the guy we already have on our team in Dorian Finney-Smith. I think if the Mavericks can convert Michael Kidd-Gilchrist into a Dorian Finney-Smith, where he can consistently shoot a three. Now, he is better at cutting to the basket, mm-hmm. so he might ultimately, if he can get a consistent jump shot, he might be better offensively than Dorian Finney-Smith is, because Smith is really limited offensively. It's catch and shoot only.
Kidd-Gilchrist is better with the ball. Like, he can make a play with, he can dribble and, you know.
But there is so much potential with having both of those guys on your team at the same time, because they kind of do the opposite of the other person. For example, Finney-Smith is a really good offensive rebounder. And having Kidd-Gilchrist and Finney-Smith out there the entire time with their motor, with their length and their athleticism, I think mm-hmm. there's so much potential for them to be a lockdown. And then having Porzingis protect the paint. But Kidd-Gilchrist is going to have to find a way to be a positive on the offensive end if he's going to get consistent minutes.
I mean, so here's a question. Let's say he never becomes a good shooter. Is that it? Do you think that's like, you're only going to be in the NBA if you can shoot?
I don't think he has to be a good shooter. I just think he has to be someone that can shoot the ball.
Because I would say Dwight Powell couldn't really shoot. In fact, this year didn't really take a lot of jumpers except for when he started shooting threes mm-hmm. all of a sudden like he does every year. But he's never really been able to do that. Like, he is not a shooter. He's a dunker. And so
we saw, though, for example, when we play the Jazz and the Mavericks play five out, mm-hmm. the way the Jazz countered that is by putting Gobert on Dorian Finney-Smith. Now, Finney-Smith is a consistent three-point shooter now, but he's still not a real threat.
Well, and once he gets the ball, it's not really a mismatch because he can't do anything with it.
Yes, except shoot. So that's how they countered it. So you can't really have two guys on the court at the same time that can't shoot the ball consistently.
Okay, my counter to that would be that Kidd-Gilchrist can make a play with a ball. Like, take out the fact that he can't shoot and he's got the weird form and all that. When he has the ball, he's just like any other NBA player. He can drive it to the rim against tough defense and finish strong. Like, he has the strength to finish through contact.
Can he do that at a high level?
Well, no, because he would be doing it already. But I'm saying that he can. And so for the 2 or 3 times when he's put in that position, I think he can do that. You know, and Luka Porzingis do the rest.
Yeah,
he would have to
be able to do that in high level situations, in playoffs and big games, in order for him to be that threat. Because doing it against the Orlando Magic or the whoever the Charlotte Hornets play throughout the year, the Hawks, you know, that's a little different to be able to make a really nice play in for a dunk than doing it against the Bucks in a game seven.
Well, and all of this, you know, is said, and then at the end of it, he's averaged like 5 points a game for his career. Yeah. So it's like he it's like he's really good at this, and these are his strengths, and he can do this and that. And it's like, yeah, so why does he only score 5 points a game?
Well, we saw when this past summer when all the players, all the footage of them in the gym working out or playing pickup ball, and you saw Dorian Finney-Smith doing all these moves with the ball under the legs, spin move, pull up jumpers. Yeah, he can do that, but can he do it on a higher level and
against NBA talent?
Yeah, and that would be the question with Kid Gilchrist.
Yeah, I am. You know, I don't really know what his long-term outlook is. I know what the possibility is, but I don't know if he's going to get there. Yeah. That was my phone. I apologize.
Like I said, if the Mavs can find a way to turn him into a Dorian Finney-Smith, huge win. It is no risk to them.
Okay, next question that needs to be answered after the break. You brought this one up. How will Luka hold up?
Yeah, we saw last year at the second half of the season, his shooting percentages just plummeted. And I guess the idea or the thought was that his body was just tired. Yeah. He'd never played that many games before. Well, I mean, I guess he had played, what, I think, 100 games, and then had a week off.
Because they had the EuroLeague championship, and then the draft, and that whole circus. And
so you saw he began to break down. Now, he came into the season within a lot better shape. So how is he going to, you know, handle the exhaustion, or how's his body going to hold up to the long NBA season? I'd be curious to see what his numbers look like at the second half of the season.
Break, And I think it is a legitimate question, because last year that happened, but they also traded their entire starting lineup. Yeah. So was it just that they were tanking and they were like, you know what, don't, or he just realized this doesn't really matter right now?
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't
see
that.
Yeah. That's so, why I'm curious to see what we'll the result out. Is. Yeah.
Another question. So I worded it as this: how far will the Luka Porzingis duo progress this year? And I think, like, there's the ceiling of what that could be, but I don't think we're going to see it this year, just because it's only one season and the injuries and all that. But how close to that will we get this year, and what will they do to figure that out?
I mean, there's a good chance we'll see the Sacramento game right before the break was really nice to see. I mean, both of them top of their game.
Was that when he had like 5 assists or something?
Well, Porzingis. Yeah. Well, he had 27 points, 12 rebounds or something like that. And Luka had 33, but both of them shot super efficiently. Neither one of them forced anything. They played within the system. Yeah. They allowed Curry and Hardaway to also, Hardaway, I think, had 19, or Curry had 19. So the way they ran the offense, the way Luka allowed other players to bring the ball down and make a play, it was really effective. And if that's what they're going to be, very, very tough to beat, because offensively, even if their defense just stays the way it is, offensively, it's going to be hard for teams to match that offensive efficiency that they showed against the Sacramento Kings. And we saw even in the Detroit game in Mexico City. Yeah, even then, it wasn't the greatest game for Porzingis, but you saw they were starting to gel.
Yeah.
And like I said before the All-Star break, this is really the worst time for the All-Star break, because we can't get time together.
We just had a good game.
So maybe we won't see their full potential as far as wins and losses, but stylistically, or what they do together on the court, I think we'll be able to see a real close representation of that if Porzingis continues to make progress physically.
Yeah, I think I remember after that game, we said that this is like the blueprint for what that duo should, how they should make that work.
And I think the starting lineup, because they started the game with Jaylen.
Yeah.
I just didn't understand it. Like, I felt like Curry,
as well as he'd been playing, it's like, why?
Curry has earned to be a starter, just like Tim Hardaway. I don't know why Curry has to fight tooth and nail to get that starting role where Hardaway just had one good game or two good games. Yep, he's a starter. He's just a starter, folks. Yeah. You know, but Curry is just, he's got to grind it out to earn it. And I think he's earned it. And he started the second half of that game.
Yeah, sometimes it's like a minute by minute basis for Curry.
It's not fair.
It's like you got to earn your, you have to earn your next minute on the court.
I don't understand. Like the guy is probably their second best playmaker.
Yeah.
On the team. He needs to be out there with Luka.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe it's less about him starting and more about having that offense off the bench.
What it boils down to is we're smarter than Carlisle, and we should be coaching the Mavericks.
I've been thinking about doing a segment called If I Were the Coach, and it basically we were just run down like decisions that were made in recent games and say what we would have done if we were the coach.
Because we're smarter.
Yeah, it would be more of like a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing. Like, obviously, we know we're not smarter, but just as stupid fans, these are the stupid ideas that we have. Well, one of the things is,
clearly the Mavericks are not as good with Luka. So, Jalen needs to be the starting point guard. Let Luka be your sixth man.
I mean, they beat the Bucks on the road without Luka. They beat the Sixers on the road without Luka. And almost beat the Heat without him.
And blew a 30-point lead to the Raptors without Luka.
Yeah, but was he at that game? Because maybe his influence on the bench.
He was yelling at them to go because they were getting trapped and they were just standing there.
I remember. And nobody knew how to handle it. I know. Okay. Fourth question. Should Hardaway be part of their long-term outlook?
You know, I've gone back and forth with this all season long. I think at the right price, yes.
Yeah.
I think the way his what he is asked to do for the Mavericks, it's a perfect fit. Now, defensively, he's abysmal.
Yeah.
And he's got the right tools. His brain isn't there. Yeah. Like, it doesn't work defensively.
Well, he doesn't have the mind of a great defense. Not that he's stupid or anything.
No,
but
no, yeah.
Defensively. Yeah, yeah.
But I think at the right price, I think the Mavericks would love to keep him. But I don't think they're going to overpay for him. You don't have to anymore. You don't have to pay the Harrison Barnes or the Wes Matthews anymore because you have Luka and Porzingis.
True. He's got a player option this summer, and you think he's going to opt out?
Oh, yeah. He's definitely opting out.
Because he's earned aid.
Well, he'll probably test to see.
Put some feelers
if he
out.
Can get around $13, $14 million a year on a longer deal, like a three-year deal, I think he opts out in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Because no player wants to go into the final year of their contract, especially when it's a larger, you're basically begging to be traded. Ask Wes Matthews.
Yeah.
He basically was begging
to
be traded.
Harrison Barnes wasn't here.
No. Now he opted out and re-signed.
Yeah.
Because if you opt in.
Yeah.
But now you would only opt in if you aren't any good, like Wes Matthews, where you're going to get $5 million and not 17.
So you're like, I'm just going to opt in. And
exactly. But Tim Hardaway, he's still young. He's a really good shooter. He's having a really good season with the Mavericks. I think he opts out, hopefully re-signs at a more reasonable number for him.
So here's one way that I've been looking at roster building. A lot of times we talk about contracts and can you commit that much money to a guy that does this or that? But I look at it as you only get five guys on the court at one time.
Is that it?
Yes, that is it. Those are the rules of the basketball. Yes, that's my new advanced analytic. So you only get five guys. Do you want to spend one of those spots on Tim Hardaway or on a guy like Tim Hardaway? Because yeah, he's really good offensively, but he's so bad defensively that now means you have to spend another spot on a guy that makes up for him defensively.
I think
so. Now you've really invested two spots in Hardaway.
That's why the price has to be right for Hardaway.
But it's at that point, it's not even about money.
Well, you got to have guys on the court.
Yeah,
you know. So he's clearly a good NBA player.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think that's debatable.
Well, my point is like, let's say you could get a guy that brings offense and defense. Then that's a better use of that spot, and you don't have to now take up another spot to make up for him defensively.
100% agree.
Okay, it's a more efficient use
of
that
spot.
Well,
yes, but that depends on who's available.
Right,
So if he opts out and the Mavericks now have, I don't know, 20 million, let's just say. I don't really know what their cap space is.
I like 20 million.
Yeah, let's say they have 20 million and hypothetically a Chris Middleton type player was available or Klay Thompson. Obviously, you would go after them before Hardaway. But if that guy's not available, I don't want to wait another season and keep the powder dry. You don't want to keep the cap space or the money, because that's kind of what we do every year since 2011. We never really sign anybody significant because we always were waiting for one more year.
There's always another free agent.
Yeah, because Giannis or LeBron or Dwight or Darren or whoever all these. Yeah. Duran. Not Darren.
Oh, yeah. Duran.
So, yeah, obviously if there's a better player out there, you got to use that money for him. But The good thing is, since he's currently your player, I believe they could re-sign him and go over the cap. So they could use the available cap space to sign another good player.
True.
And then just re-sign him.
Yeah, that's a good point about if he's the best player available, you keep him. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, even if, like, so you have him and something better comes along, you can always trade him. You shouldn't not sign him just because there might be somebody better in 2 years. Although that is really the Maverick strategy, maybe they won't re-sign
him. In my opinion, that's been a problem because they can never make these blockbuster trades to bring in these really good players because they never have assets. They always not sign people. And the one time they had an asset, which was a number 9 overall pick, Dennis Smith, and they had the expiring contracts, they were able to make a trade, but they had the asset. And they got to have assets to get assets. And for some reason, it's like they don't know that. Of course, I'm smarter than Donnie Nelson, and I should be running the Mavericks.
You should be.
No.
And we have some trade ideas that I think we would like to throw around.
Right now, the trade deadline's passed.
Oh, right. Okay. Maybe next year.
Next year.
Okay. Last question. Will they fix their home issues? And we'll know the answer to this one
pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly, yeah.
I don't even know what the issue, in my personal opinion, and again, we've already established I'm smarter than Rick Carlisle and Donnie Nelson, so my opinion holds a lot of weight. My personal opinion is teams are bringing it. When they come to Dallas.
Because the Mavs are good.
Well, not just because of that. Because they watch SportsCenter and they watch First Take and they watch this, and it's always about Luka.
Oh.
And so they want to, it's similar to the team that wins the championship, other than this year because Kawhi left. But the team that wins the championship, the next year they get everybody's best. Mm. Or the number one team in the West, every time the Lakers play a team, they get that team's best effort because it's the Lakers.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening to the Mavericks at home. Teams want to play their best game against them because they want to beat Luka on his home court, because they probably are hearing about all the Luka crap just as much as everybody.
Well, and
and they want to beat him. And the Mavericks aren't matching that same intensity.
It's like if you beat Luka, that's something you can put on your resume for the year.
We went into Dallas and shut him up.
Or even just as a player, I beat Luka.
So, and I think the really, really good teams, the championship contenders, like the Warriors, they would get everybody's best effort every night, and they still won like 55, 60 games or 72.
Yeah,
73 games, So if the Mavericks are going to be contenders, they're going to have to be able to beat these teams regardless of how hard they come in and wanting to beat you.
The good news is that 6 of their first 7 games out of the break are on the road.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, good. That's a lot. Yes.
They have a 4-game road trip. Not right out of it, but that's part
of it. It's 2 games on the road and then home and then 4 on the road?
Yeah.
Well, good. Then we'll win all those games. Yeah. We'll lose the one home game against the...
It's the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, that's a loss.
I am curious to see how D'Angelo Russell fits with him and how they play with him.
With Karl Anthony Towns?
Yeah.
I mean, they'll probably score a lot or be a lot of fun, but I don't know. I don't think either one of those players are number ones.
Yeah, true.
So, and people are like, that's Karl Anthony Towns! Dude,
the way you do your impersonation.
Look, I get it. But, that's how people are going to react. It's Carl. He's the best player in the league. I get he's put up a lot of numbers, but he doesn't win.
Yeah, like literally.
He doesn't win. You gotta win.
What did they lose, like 13 in a row or something?
Yeah, of course he was injured for a lot of this. Oh, okay. So that doesn't count.
That's fair. Okay. So yeah, those are five questions that we think should be answered after the break. Let us know what you guys are looking forward to after the All-Star break. I want to move on now to, we started talking about their schedule. I want to talk about the five most important games after the break. I have my five listed. You have your five listed?
Well, I didn't even look at the entire second half. I looked literally.
Thank you for preparing.
Well, no, that's not my point. My point is the most important games after the break are the first 10 games.
That feels like a cop out.
No, it's not. It's legit. Okay. That's legit how I feel, because that's going to determine.
Okay, you made fun of me for when we picked the most important games of the season, and my first two were the first two games of the season.
Well, because that's crap. Okay,
but this is okay.
This is legit. All right.
Okay.
Remember, I'm smarter than Carlisle.
That's right. I forgot.
And smarter than I should be running the Mavericks.
I forgot. Okay. So my five most important games, the first one is, at Miami on February 28th. It's important because it'd be a good road test. I mean, coming out of the break, a lot of their games are easy. Orlando, Atlanta, Minnesota, Spurs, Minnesota again, Chicago, New Orleans. Like, so they have a kind of easy schedule, but Miami is thrown in there and it's kind of a tough game. It's the first line of a back-to-back for Miami. And so, you know, they're probably going to want to try to end it early if they can. Also, that is Luka's birthday. And so I hope they don't lose focus.
Butler's going to drop like 55
probably.
Yeah.
Welcome to the
NBA.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think like throwing that element into it, it kind of makes it a little more interesting. I hope that they don't get into just the after party and focus on the game.
This was my whole point about the first 10 games. What kind of team is this? Because the really good teams, after the All-Star break, it's all business.
Yeah.
And are the Mavericks going to be one of those all business after the All-Star break? Or are they going to come out of the All-Star break, go 6-4 in this really easy cake schedule and not take it seriously?
Yeah.
And that's why I said the first 10 games. But that game, especially because that's the one that Chris Dunn tried to kill Luka Doncic.
Oh, when he sprained his ankle?
Yes. Okay. Welcome. Welcome to the podcast.
You said we tried to kill him. I was like, wait, I don't remember.
I was a little dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a little. Yeah.
Let's not start straying now. We're doing good.
Okay. My second most important game is versus Memphis. It's home against Memphis on March 6th, which is also our anniversary. Did you know that? It's our wedding anniversary. So we should go to the game for our anniversary.
Well, you know, we're going to three games the very next week.
That is true.
So for our anniversary,
we're going on the road trip with them.
Yes.
Well, not with them.
Oh, we're gonna be on the plane.
We're just gonna follow them.
If you guys don't know, we're like BFFs with the Mavs.
We're not. Okay. Yes, Memphis. So this is the first night of a back-to-back for Memphis. Not that they're going to rest anyone, but again, they probably want to get a solid win. Their next game is against the Hawks. So this is going to get all of their focus.
We got to destroy them because of
and also again, cause they beat the Mavs the last time.
Yeah.
So, okay. Third most important game is at home against Utah. That's on March 26th. The Mavs are currently 3.5 games behind Utah. So if they want to jump up to that fourth seed, well, all of these games are important, but this one obviously for matchups. And then also, I think it'll be a good test to see who these teams really are. I mean, Utah started off awful and then won like 10 in a row and then kind of teetered a little bit. Now they're still fourth. Is that who they really are? Who are the Mavs really? I think it'll be a good test.
Yeah. I mean, the Jazz are good. And right now, they're probably better than the Mavericks. But again, who knows with the amount of injuries we've had and now with our new starting lineup or whatever, who knows?
Yeah. Okay. Fourth most important, just like the fourth one on my list.
Yeah.
I did it in chronological order in case you haven't noticed.
Next, please.
Okay. Against Houston at home on April 7th. Now, they actually face Houston twice after the break. Both games are at home, but this game is a first line of a back to back for Houston. So again, they probably want to. I mean, it's. I'm not saying it always does, but it could be a factor.
I don't think the first game of a back to back plays any role. You know, it's always the second game. Yeah. So it's not like the Rockets are going to be like, we play tomorrow, so let's kill them early. You know, they're going to come out and play hard because they want to win.
Yeah, well, I know whenever we're watching games and it's the first line of a back-to-back, we're always happy if they can, like, blow them out so that the guys can rest.
Yeah, we're happy about that. If they do that, and that would be the goal, but I think the Rockets' mindset is more just win the game. I mean,
yeah, they probably want to win either way. And then again, the Mavs are 2.5 games behind Houston. So those two games are
could determine really their important. Seeding, yeah. Really.
And then I think probably, I almost want to say the most important game after the All-Star break is the last one.
Against Oklahoma City?
Yeah, at home on tax day, April 15th. Too bad Ryan Brokaw isn't here. They could something for him.
Accounting skills.
Yeah, they're currently tied with the same record. It's the last game of the season. Couple of other notes on the schedule. The Rockets and Grizzlies play that night. So that's this game, you know, going along with the Rockets playing, that could mean a lot for the seedings. And then the Jazz and the Nuggets play the night before. So those 2 days, it's going to say a lot about where the Mavs finish.
I would say that if that Thunder game has a lot of meaning on where the Mavericks are going to stand going into the playoffs, and it was a really bad second half of the season, or the last 27 games or so of the season, because I honestly believe they are a much better, not saying that the Thunder aren't good. I think the Thunder are a nice team, but I think the Mavericks are much better, and they have just, the reason they're tied is due to injuries that the Mavericks had suffered.
I see what you mean.
So
it's less about like just seeding between them and the Thunder, although I think that is a factor, but also just since a lot is going to be happening at that moment and seeding usually comes down to the last game is.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Okay. I just hope that it's not between the Mavs and the Thunder. Yeah,
that's true. But really, like you said, I mean, they have, like, those are the five most important, and in a lot of ways, they're the five hardest. Like,
they are. Yeah. Well, their schedule is.
You don't want to, like, take anything for granted or get cocky or anything, but they do have, they have a favorable schedule.
The Mavs are primed for a really strong last 27 games of the season to really find their rhythm. The real meat of their schedule with all the really tough competition, I feel like they played it all in a month and a half or 2 months, starting late December through up to the All-Star break. I feel like they got all of their tough games out of the way because that was a brutal, they played the most games in the league. They were playing freaking
top
four games in five nines, top competition on the road. I feel like they knocked all those games out now. And so they're really primed for a really strong post-All-Star game run. And that's why, again, I say that these first 10 games are going to tell us how the season's going to go for the Mavs. Do they have that killer instinct mentality? Which, let's be honest, they haven't shown that ability all year. So if they have it, then, man, they're going to go 20-7 or whatever to finish the season.
Yeah. Okay, we've been talking for like 45 minutes.
You done?
Which I feel like is enough for an episode.
You want to analyze it some more?
Analyze the episode or analyze determine the Mavericks? If the
time is long or not, or will we lose viewers, or is somebody going to die?
It's at because 43, we went 40, 55, so 40, almost 40, 44 minutes.
Yeah.
I feel like that's long enough. What do you think we should do a poll? I can pull up Twitter really quick and just see.
I think you should analyze it to determine if we're going to get more listeners or not based on these last couple of minutes. I think if they look at the podcast and Apple podcast and they see the length, are they going to be like, minutes. Or are they going to watch it or listen to it?
I think 44 minutes is good.
All right, let's end it.
I had another segment that I wanted to do, but we'll save that because it's one that we can do anytime. So we'll save it for next time or for this summer.
All right, let's conclude for 5 minutes.
Okay, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, guys. Remember, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a rating or review. We really do appreciate that. You can also listen to new episodes on DallasHoopsCast.com. So if whatever platform you use on the website, you can just listen to it in your web browser. Make sure you're following, subscribe to the podcast. That helps us grow. I'm on Twitter at @_SydneyMyers. Martin is at @MartinLMyers. Is there anything else that you think we should add there? No? Okay. Thank you guys for listening. Is that it? Okay. And we'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.